a passionate instigator and dynamic problem solver. Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Times. We are on the first Thursday of the month. And for all of you regular listeners, you know what that means. It means that we are going to have a fun and world slash political slash whatever good time with none other than Matt Connerton from Matt Connerton Unleashed. Matt has not called in yet, but I know he's going to be calling in a couple of minutes. So do not be disappointed. You get another chance to see the comic interpretations of this bad comedy we call our government right here on the Dr. Kevin Show. We do this once a month just for your amusement and ours. Because, you know, you have choices. You can either laugh at all of the completely insane and incomprehensible actions that are going on in this country and in our government, or you can pull your hair out.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
Cry, throw temper tantrums, or you can listen to Matt and feel like, you know, I thought it was hopeless before. But now Matt stopped talking. I know it's hopeless. See, these are the kind of public service things we do for you here at the Dr. Kevin Show. Matt, welcome.
Welcome. I have, when I stop talking, that's when you know all hope is lost.
Well, I don't know. You went through a period there where every time you opened your mouth, it felt like not only was hope lost, but it was found, murdered, and separated into Jeffrey Dahmer-sized pieces and scattered throughout the world.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's still like that. Yeah. Abandon all hope.
Well, you'd
be surprised how liberating it is. I'm telling you, Dr. Kevin, I have discovered nihilism and I love it. Actually, it doesn't really matter if I love it.
Does it matter if you hate it?
No, that's the beauty.
Ah, so I don't know. Can I have an order of whatever he's smoking?
Oh, I wish I was smoking something. He'll tell you.
So, speaking of which, in our own little state, once again, they're going to try to see if they can legalize marijuana and catch up with the last half of the 20th century. It would be so nice if this live free or die state would actually treat it like it was a live free or die state. Don't you agree?
Well, like I always say, it's embarrassing. You know, we're surrounded by not only states, but Canada. I mean, our borders, we're completely surrounded by places where it's fully legal. And yet we just can't get there. As you said, the live free or die state, but we just can't quite seem to get there. And our governor has said he will continue to veto anything that lands on his desk regarding that. And I guess probably even more so now that he's eyeing a potential run for the presidency. So, you know, he's got to make sure he can win those primaries.
Did we ever get any indication at all as to what his objection is? I mean, does he want us to return to the days of bootleggers and prohibition? I mean, I don't hear him ever talking about banning alcohol, but who knows?
No, alcohol is a cash cow for New Hampshire. That's why we have those state-run liquor stores right on the highway. Now, you know, I think I've heard him address it in an interview or two over the years, and I think he's just one of those people who takes the position that if you legalize cannabis, then all of a sudden everyone's going to be walking around stoned all the time, which is, of course, completely absurd on every level. But I think that's kind of his line. But I also don't think that's the reason. I think that I think the real reason is there's a concern that if they do fully legalize cannabis, that that might actually cannibalize liquor sales, that they might sell less alcohol because our state is very much in that business. So if they begin to, I think Jenny had said that, you know, she's a former state rep and she knows the Liquor Commission very well. And I think she had said that that's the concern. That's what it really is. They won't say that, but that's what it really is, that if they go fully legal on cannabis, it will affect the sales of alcohol. And like I said, our state is very much in the alcohol business.
Well, with some of the things that have gone on in this state, we need to be. Did you see our illustrious governor was interviewed about his impression of Trump coming to New Hampshire to stoke the fires, which turned out to be anything but. But did you see that little interview he did?
I don't think I saw that one specifically. I mean, I know that Sununu was not interested in being a part of Trump's. He didn't go, right? He didn't go to Trump's little event.
His little soiree with handpicked people that would only sit there and drool and go, "Go, Trump, go!" Yeah, no.
Yes, that one. Yes.
Yeah. Well, they put his face up as one of the top six people whose names are being mentioned to run for president in 2024.
Yeah.
And he did actually say, well, of course I'm considering running for president sometime. He wouldn't deny nor confirm.
Right.
You know, he just kept on referring to DeSantis and Trump as the two. Actually, he only referred to Trump because he kept on saying, well, DeSantis hasn't really declared, but I was actually kind of surprised on national TV how little charisma he had.
Who, Sununu or Trump?
Yeah, Sununu.
Oh, really? You don't find him charismatic?
I have seen him speak before and found him more charismatic. I actually was like, if you're thinking about running for president, I think you need to go work with some media specialists, because it was a kind of unimpressive interview. I mean, if you get a chance to grab a clip, I can't remember if it was Today or Good Morning America, some big national show, but I was not impressed.
Mm.
Of course, you know, he wasn't like standing up and yelling, "Oh, but it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. Nothing's ever more perfect in the world." So maybe we've just all, between his screeching and DeSantis' screeching, maybe I've just become immune to a low level of charisma. But I wasn't seeing it. I was like, oh, you're coming across a little bit like a New Hampshire hick here.
Hmm.
Maybe it was just me. I don't know.
But I think he's usually pretty good with the media, but I haven't seen that clip. Maybe he was having an off day. It's winter. Maybe he was sick. Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't bad.
Yeah.
But he was definitely not in the, I'm a star league that DeSantis or Trump is in. And of course they're now saying Haley is going to throw her hat in the ring. So,
yeah.
And what do you think about the latest news on Carrie Lake?
Yeah, she's she's doing a couple of events in Iowa, correct?
Well, she's doing a couple of events in Iowa, and she met with the Republican Can't Be Too Crazy committee.
Mm-hmm.
About running for Senate in Arizona.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, she had a couple hour meeting with them today. I think it was today. And then she's off to Iowa trying to do that. So, yeah, you heard about her whole hot mic thing, right? What she said when she didn't know the mic was still hot.
Oh, no, I missed this. Was this today?
Last couple of days. She was caught on a hot mic saying that she only keeps fueling the whole she's actually the governor thing so that Trump will pick her to be the vice president, to run with him on the ticket as vice president. She admitted it on a hot mic that she knew she lost.
Oh, wow. No kidding. I didn't. That totally got by me. I didn't know that. Oops.
But the Republican National Committee is still talking about, supporting her to maybe run for Senate. Because why would anything like honesty, truth, morals, or ethics ever get in the way?
Well, I think the modern Republican Party is incapable of anything approaching shame or embarrassment of any kind. So in the end, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. So tell me, and of course, what did you, I was curious, I don't know whether you talked about it on your show or not, but they have kicked, Omar, is it Representative Omar off the Foreign Affairs Committee?
Ilhan Omar, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought the speech that she gave today was very good. There was an element of defiance to it. And it's not a surprise, but I'll tell you what I was a little bit disappointed in. Victoria Spartz of Texas, I think, I had complimented her on my show recently because she had said that she would not support such a thing because she said that while she didn't agree with what she framed as the Democrats' persecution of Trump, and, I don't agree with her framing of it, but I respected that she was saying that she would not support punishing Ilhan Omar or any other Democrats without some form of due process to prove that those Democrats were not fit to be on those committees, because she said that, again, while she didn't approve of how the Democrats treated Trump necessarily, two wrongs don't make a right. And she was taking the point of view that just because they did it doesn't mean we should be doing it in retaliation, and that this would be clearly retaliatory. And I really respected, because you never hear a politician say anything like that. Well, it turns out, I guess she didn't mean it, because she did vote to remove Omar in the end. Kevin McCarthy was able to flip her vote. So, but it's not none of it's a great surprise. This was probably part of the deal anyway that McCarthy had to make with the likes of Matt Gaetz and the others, that Ilhan Omar would be punished, and Adam Schiff as well, and Eric Swalwell. And although I have some questions about the Eric Swalwell, that might, or is, how do you say his name? I don't know if I'm saying his name correctly, but there might be a legitimate concern there. But I think with the others, it's clearly retaliatory. And we're going to see a lot of that, I think.
So, a couple of things. One is that they would have George Santos, the Bozo the Clown of the recently, Republicans, who wears more makeup than a drag queen. And I mean that metaphorically, because, he's always got the what's today's lie that we found out about him? This is wrong, blah, blah, to our Jewish allies to have her on there after he lied about being Jewish. Like, did that bring up any, absurdity to you, Matt?
Well, in fairness, now, he did clarify that, though, Dr. Kevin. When asked about lying about being Jewish, he did explain that he didn't mean that he was Jewish. He meant that he was Jew-ish. So you can see the distinction.
Yeah, I think that one went by me.
Yeah, I mean, he probably, when he said he was Jew-ish, he probably misspoke and said it too quickly. So it sounded like he was saying Jewish when he meant to say Jew-ish. See, everything is easily explainable if you just give him a chance to, explain it to us. It's always a good explanation, of course.
You think he's going to actually survive now that they're going after financial donation inconsistency lying on his FEC forms?
No, I think he'll be in prison by summer. I think this guy is going to end up in prison. What's your read on, what do you think is going on with him? I mean, you have doctor in your name. Do you think is he insane? Is he a pathological liar? Is he a performance artist? What is, because obviously everyone is focused on the fraud, but I'm trying to figure out, I'm always fascinated by what drives a person to behave this way to begin with. What do you think his deal is? Do you have any theories about what's going on with this guy?
Well, you know, obviously, as I tell all my people, though I'm a doctor, I'm not a medical doctor, so nothing I'm saying here is me diagnosing this person. And
right.
I would get in a lot of trouble for the prescription that I would have for him. Think of Alice in Wonderland and the Queen of Hearts. That would be my prescription for him. I'm going between a form of narcissism, mm-hmm. and which can involve pathological lying. There's a type of pathological lying involved in that because they believe everything they say. Or whether he's just pathological. But I suspect, I mean, the way that he keeps shifting the truth, I mean, there is some mental instability with him.
Yeah.
I mean, but the fact that he told so many blatant lies and didn't think he would get caught, I would say it's probably, if you put him under a psychiatric examination, they're probably going to come up, you know, he might have some borderline personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
That would be explain some of his behaviors, but there's something there. But,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm all for taking care of mental health. I just don't want them as my rep in Congress.
Right.
And we'll be right back right after this break.
Conscious media for conscious minds. Om Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
You came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the 1 in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show here at Om Times. I forgot to say, I don't know what's wrong with me, this is a live call-in show, and you could be calling in live. Or I do mediumship, so you can call in dead. And I can still talk to you.
That's exciting.
So, you know, I just like to put it out there. But you can call in at 202-570-7057. That's 202-570-7057. And you can ask me or Matt a question or share an opinion. The only thing we ask is that you be respectful, because if you're not respectful, we will hang up on your sorry disrespectfulness. Okay. So, yeah, I don't know. There's something wrong with Santos. It was proposed that maybe it's just an extension of the Trump madness. He's not mentally okay. There's something wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm from your ears, from your lips to the ears of God, may his Jewish butt end up in jail by summer. Because forged checks, fraud, scam campaigns, stealing monies to help a vet's dog, lying about how he got the money, and we still don't know who got the money. And now it appears as if he forged the signature of his new treasurer on his campaign, because the guy said, I didn't agree to do it, and his name appeared through electronic signature on his stuff. Well, That's a federal offense right there.
I didn't know about the forgery. It's hard to keep up with all the George Santos stuff. That one got by me.
Well, they were harassing his old treasurer. I can't remember the woman's name now even. She was like avoiding them. One of the reporters went to, she is on the school board, she's on the library board, and they went to a library board meeting and she didn't show up for that one. And somebody actually brought up, should she be allowed to be on a library board if she's falsifying information? And actually went after her, one of the people from the board, but they couldn't get any answer from her. But then she resigned, like she was not the treasurer of his campaign. And somebody else who was a treasurer of a lot of other Republican campaigns, a new filing came correcting the information, which was clearly a lie, like correcting it somehow now makes it okay. Because I got elected and now I told you the truth with what I think, mindset of, well, I'm elected, so you're just going to have to live with it. It was an electronic signature. And the guy said, I didn't authorize that. That's not my, and that's got to be a federal offense.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's going to end up in prison. I do.
Now, there has to be a special election to replace him. It's not a governor replaced position, I don't think.
Right. That's why McCarthy is so reticent to get rid of him, because if he gets rid of him, there's an excellent chance that after all this, a Democrat will be elected in the special election. And McCarthy's got such a thin margin to work with as it is. Otherwise, I think he would have been much more, not that McCarthy is any kind of a leader, but I do think he would have been much more assertive in going ahead and getting rid of Santos already.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens first, whether there is a call for McCarthy to step down or Santos goes to jail. I mean, I think it's a horse race. Because he's not going to, you think he can hold on to this thing for 2 years? I don't think he can. This is busting out.
I don't know.
And he called out Marjorie Taylor Greene this week and said she was wrong.
Wait, who did? Oh, McCarthy.
Did.
He called out Marjorie Taylor Greene on something?
Yeah.
I think I missed that, too. What was that?
She did a, when they, because they're eliminating the subcommittee that's supposed to be investigating and looking into acts of violence, racism, violence. I don't remember the exactly subcommittee, but the Republicans are gutting it and getting rid of it. And the Democrats were fighting for it. And they brought up the whole Tyler Nichols thing.
Yeah.
And MTG had invited Ashley Babbitt's mother to that and said, why are we focusing on that when we have people here that completely let go the fact that this, that we have a mother here of a daughter who was murdered right here and no justice was ever served.
Right. I did see, actually I saw, okay. I did see something about that right before I got on the air that Kevin McCarthy actually defended the officer who shot Ashley Babbitt and said he was just doing his job.
Yep.
I agree with Kevin McCarthy on that, actually, which is rare. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. But it meant that he had to call out that she was wrong, that he wasn't murdered. I'm like, you know that she's a vengeful wench. She won't let that just slide. She'll have to get some little piece of flesh over that or create some little misery for Kevin. She's not going to take being humiliated. Oh, I mean, you know, popcorn in a comfortable chair as this infighting continues and it's only going to escalate.
Yeah. No, that's for sure.
I mean, before you know it, they're going to have to be pouring either mud or jello in the middle of the House of Representatives floor so they have something to wrestle in.
Well, I vote for jello. I think mud wrestling is disgusting and degrading, but there's something classy about jello.
Well,
something dignified.
I think mud wrestling would be more in a line and more appropriate for the participants.
I do too, but it's almost too obvious. I think if you want it to be artistic, I think you have to go with jello.
Can we infuse the jello with something that creates scratching and itching?
Oh, I thought you were going to say cyanide.
I don't think they're going to eat it. Yeah, I don't think they'll eat it.
Some of it. I don't think you can wrestle in jello though without accidentally ingesting some of it.
Oh well, there you go. So I understand your vote for cyanide.
Yeah.
So go back before we went on break. So you think Kevin may be able to hold this together for 2 years?
Oh, I think it's very possible. I do. I think it's very possible. I'm not convinced, but I think it's possible.
Well, we'll see. I just, there's gonna be at some point. I mean, are there any moderate Republicans left? I mean, is there anybody that could pass the sanity test left in the Republican Party in the House of Reps?
Oh, sure. There's plenty of them, but there's just not enough of them. There's too many of the crazies, these House Freedom Caucus people, and McCarthy had to make a deal with them, you know, to even get the speakership. So they hold a lot of cards. No, I think the truly crazy of the Republicans in the House, I think it's actually a small number, but they have an outsized amount of power. They have far more power than the, I don't want to say necessarily moderate, but the more sane members of the House. You know, Nancy Mace, for example, is someone who I think is really trying to be sort of a moderating force and a sane force in the Republican Party. I don't know how it's going to work out for her, but there are some sane people there.
Well, see, I think that the loud and delusional, as Papa used to call them, the nutcases, are going to at some point go one step too far, and the moderates are going to align themselves with the Democrats. Because if they kick Kevin out as Speaker and go for a different Speaker, that changes the whole field. Because some of these moderates have got to know that if they're in a competitive district where you have a lot of independents, or they don't have big margins that they can play with, that this is going to cost them their election if they're up in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somebody's got to be smart enough to go, if we let this completely careen, you know, like careen off the mountaintop, it will take us down. Like, yeah, I mean, you're, oh, I'm just going to shut up and vote for anything that says Republican. People, you know, aren't ever going to go away.
Right.
But there's got to be a handful of them, a decent handful, if they're moderates, that are in moderate districts where it's a crapshot. They can't guarantee that they're going to get reelected, that they won't get beat by a Democrat. And if the Democrats have enough ammunition from the circus, you know, so I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But I would love to see Kevin get tossed and some moderate go in and somebody get elected that's a moderate, that the Democrat says, we can live with this person and we'll completely back you to get this person in who's a moderate. They'll go in and they'll throw all these crazy off their committees.
Right. Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, if anything like that does happen, I don't think it'll be in the short term. You know, maybe a year from now, but it won't be in the short term.
What do you think? How do you think the meeting between Kevin McCarthy and Joe Biden really went?
Oh, probably not well. They're trying to spin it like it went well, but I can't imagine it did. And I'm very concerned. I mean, I feel like the summer of 2011 all over again. I was genuinely worried. I mean, I was very worried in the summer of 2011 about the debt limit, an issue that prior to that I'd never really considered much, and I think most Americans prior to that hadn't really considered much. But you know, there we were in a situation where, you know, it's like, oh my God, this is really important. This could wreck the global economy here in one fell swoop, and it feels like that all over again. And it's very concerning. And I always say on my show, you know, it's funny too. There's not much, as you know, I have a great disdain for President Trump, the former president, but one of the few things that I always gave him credit for, and not flippantly either, I genuinely mean it, is Trump was right on the debt limit. When a lot of Republicans in his own party, the House Freedom Caucus people, would have liked him to have taken a different stance on it, but they didn't dare cross him, so they kept their mouths shut, and they raised the debt limit, I think, three times under Trump. But Trump always had the right position on that. His position was, no, we're not going to use the debt limit as a negotiating tool. We're not putting it on the table because it's too dangerous. You have to raise the debt limit on time. And I even remember Steve Mnuchin making the rounds on the Sunday morning talk shows and saying, in this administration, we will not use the debt limit for negotiating. It's too dangerous. It's not something that we're going to fool around with. And even flirting with the idea or the suggestion that we might actually default for the first time in our nation's history is so dangerous. It affects the markets. Our bond rating gets downgraded. It's much too risky, so we're not going to do that. And that was the Trump administration's position on that. So you didn't see Republicans during the Trump administration saying, oh, maybe we just won't raise the debt limit and we'll crash the economy if we don't get our spending cuts. And that was something, you know what they say, even a blind dog gets a bone once in a while. That was something Trump was absolutely correct about. You know, but of course, whenever there's a Democrat in the White House, all of a sudden you have Republicans who care about spending. And now we're back to a time where I think it was Mitch McConnell who had once infamously said the debt limit might very well be a hostage worth taking. Although to his credit, he at one point previously had wanted to eliminate the debt limit entirely so this wouldn't keep coming up. But he didn't get anywhere with that idea.
Like, why take something off the ground that can be used as a hostage, right? You know, because that's what old good America is, good old fashioned America is about. My hostage versus your hostage. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if there are Republicans that think that if they created this chaos, that they could somehow turn around and blame it on the Democrats and win control back through it. But I don't see it going that way. Would you?
Well, I hate to think that there are Republicans that would be so sinister as to be willing to potentially wreck the global economy just to get back into full power. But it is possible that some might be thinking that, because what would happen is if we did default and it wrecks the economy, they'll turn around. The Republicans will turn around and say, look, this is what Biden's economic policy has done. This is what all that inflation has done. It damaged our economy. They won't take any responsibility for it being the debt limit. They'll just blame it on Biden. And Americans tend to give the chief executive far too much credit and or blame for how the economy performs, in my view. So there may be some that are thinking that way. Yeah, let's crash the economy and then we'll blame it on Biden and we'll get the White House back in 2024 and the Senate. That may very well be a political calculus among some Republicans.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it would go that way. I could be wrong. But, you know, I read somewhere, and I'd be interested to see what you think about this thought process, because you have the white Christian nationalists,
mm-hmm.
who basically want to make us a theocracy. That's what they want.
Yes.
And I read somewhere that they're behind crashing this economy because they think that would be their time to be able to step up into enough power to take control of the country. That it's very calculated, and that these white Christian nationalists are very calculated, that only by basically burning this country to the ground do they have any hope of actually getting the real power that would make them perpetually in charge.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you run across that theory. I don't know if you have what you think about it, or I'm throwing it out to you now to see any thoughts that you have. Because let's face it, they're fascist and they're a cult, and critical thinking skills, not big on the critical thinking skills. The majority, they're following the cult leaders. And I think so. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if you ever go to the website rightwingwatch.org, but if you go to that website, you'll find examples of people who definitely, they do seem to believe that, you know, these Christian nationalists who promote the very notions that that you just referred to. Absolutely. And they're crazy. They're absolutely insane.
Yeah. And now they're a power group in the GOP.
Yep.
Crazy like a fox. I saw this thing about the 14 checkpoints of how to recognize fascism. And it was bone chilling because it's the current MAGA crazy Republican checklist. It's exactly what they're doing. And the people that are falling for it are, for the most part, they're the scared that they're going to lose their supremacy, white supremacist thinking, that down deep think that all of the other people, all the non-Christians, all the people of different colors and races and stuff like that, are technically inferior and not capable of running a good country. But they really believe it.
Right.
And it's frightening. It's frightening that they're so terrified of losing this 200-year edge of being, you know, having the biggest stick in the party, you know, the biggest stick in the country, and beating people with it. That I don't think there's nothing that they wouldn't do to make it happen. They're scary. They're a cult.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's always existed. But I think one of the things that we saw over the course of Trump was, you know, the crazies feel kind of emboldened, and they don't feel like they have to hide their freak flag anymore. They can let it fly. And, you know, I think Charlottesville has a lot to do with that. You know, I think a lot of these people felt really emboldened after Charlottesville, and, you know, having a leader who will sort of wink at them. And yeah. I think you're right, and I think they're a real danger.
Well, and it's interesting because Trump is not a white Christian nationalist. He's a flim-flam guy that's
right,
taking him over. I mean, even the head of the white Christian nationalist, I mean, you know, there's that whole debate of, you know, did they really want Roe v. Wade overturned? And that's come back to at least semi-bite them. And, I, you know, but anyways. So what else have you been talking about on your show? In an uncharacteristic way, I've been leading this conversation the whole time. Usually I let you lead it. When we come back for our last segment, Matt is taking the helm. Going to share with us the true meaning of crazy American politics.
The Real Conscious Connection. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Vox Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Join me every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio for Vox Novus, the new voice.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the last segment of the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Time. We are a live call-in show. If you're listening to this between 6 and 7 Eastern Standard Time, on the first Thursday of the month in February, then you can call in. If you're listening to this as a replay, you can call in, but you're not going to get anything. But you can call in at 202-570-7057. It's 202-570-7057. Call in, share a comment, a thought, an idea, ask a question. And I'm now going to turn this beginning part of the segment over to Matt. What's been going on your show? What have been the hot topics, and what do you think people are not paying attention that they should? What's going on in your world?
Oh, God. It's always hard to narrow it down. You know, there's always so many different things going on. You know what my show was kind of engulfed with for a couple of days was, I don't know, are you familiar with Steven Crowder?
No. Talk to me.
Are you familiar with Ben Shapiro?
Yeah. He's a right-wing nut job that pretends to be much more well-spoken than he is. Is that who I'm thinking of?
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to describe him, certainly. And I wouldn't quibble with any of that. Yeah, so Ben Shapiro is part owner of The Daily Wire, which is a very popular conservative online media property. And Steven Crowder, he had a show. He has a show called Louder with Crowder. Now, he doesn't have the same level of fame, sort of mainstream fame that Ben Shapiro does. But Crowder, in terms of online media, is pretty famous and successful. And he was on The Blaze, Glenn Beck's online media property. And his contract ended, and he was offered a $50 million deal by The Daily Wire. And he, instead of taking the deal, he ended up basically reading the term sheet live on the air on his YouTube channel and going over it. And it's a really interesting story. It's complex, and it kind of engulfed my show, like I said, for at least a couple of days. You know, I'm fascinated by, you know, for one thing, I love the drama. You know, so he's basically, everyone at The Daily Wire is now furious with Steven Crowder, even though they're all conservatives and they all think the same things. And it's just been really interesting. It's been a really interesting look into the world of online media. You know, if you kind of think of media as, I mean, this is obviously reductive, but if you kind of think of, you know, you've got legacy media, like cable news, for example, and then you've got online media. And, you know, and then there's some crossover between the two, obviously, but it's been a very interesting world, look into the world of how online media works and how these contracts are structured. And I've learned a lot from that, but, this month on my show, you know, it is February, it's Black History Month. And, we have, someone, our friend Eric Pilcher, who does, classic film reviews every Friday. And we had something interesting yesterday. So for this week, he wanted to do a double feature. He wanted to do a couple of movies from the blaxploitation genre. So, and I guess when those films were originally shown in theaters, they were often shown as double features. So we did one Wednesday, and he's doing another one tomorrow, sort of a double feature this week. So yesterday's film was Shaft, and tomorrow's film is Superfly. And somebody who works here, who you've probably met actually at one point or another, when you used to come and, you know, used to come here to the building to do Norm's show back in the day. So you may have met Joe Lahr at some point. You probably have. But Joe sent me an email just expressing his thoughts about the blaxploitation genre and challenging some of what Eric was saying. And it just, it's created for a really interesting dialogue and ongoing discussion on my show as we, you know, as we are now in Black History Month. And Eric is doing every week, he's doing a different film that he feels is appropriate for Black History Month. And Eric, by the way, is a conservative Republican and an evangelical. So you almost, it's funny, you know, I hate that it's such a cliche. You can't judge a book by its cover, but it really is true. You wouldn't necessarily expect, Dr. Kevin, a Christian, a white Christian evangelical conservative Republican to really go out of his way to honor and celebrate Black History Month. But Eric thinks it's very important. And I just I always tell him he's my favorite conservative. But now, you know, so we've got that going.
Okay. But is he presenting these films in a, because I thought you said exploitation. So is he presenting these as, go ahead.
Well, blaxploitation, which is a term that is often used to describe films like Shaft and Superfly. Some people don't like the term. For example, the director of Shaft, I forget his name now, he completely derides that term, doesn't like it, doesn't think it applies. Now there's a term for newer films, urban exploitation, which is, you know, applies to movies like Boys in the Hood and things like that. But Eric thought, you know, as part of reviewing films for Black History Month, that might be an interesting way to start, is looking at these blaxploitation films and kind of debating, you know, and discussing the pros and cons of them. And is that term blaxploitation appropriate? Because are these films actually exploitive, or are they actually very empowering? You know, because you finally, like with Shaft, for example, Richard Roundtree, who played Shaft, that was really the first time in the history of cinema where you had a Black lead actor as an action hero in a film. Audiences had never seen that before. So that's, you know, that's the positive aspect of that. But what Joe Lahr was saying on the negative side was that, yes, but these films also reinforce negative Black stereotypes. And so that would be something on the negative side of that equation.
Well, I mean, and I kind of get both sides of that in a way, because
yeah.
On one hand, you know, the thing, and I don't know how deeply Eric goes into it, but the thing is, I will bet you the majority of the people who made the most money off the film were white.
Yes. I think Eric does mention that, yes.
And that the Black actors were paid probably closer to what females were paid than what actual male, like, action stars would be paid. I'm sure that they weren't paid the same rate.
That's probably true, yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's not an either or. It can be an end of both. It can
right.
exploit, you know. The thing is, on one hand, we have, yeah, they had some role models. At least Black kids get to see somebody Black being a good guy and not getting, you know, like the old joke, you know, when you see either a gay or a Black person in a horror film, we know that they're going to be one of the first ones to die. I mean, mm-hmm. they only put them in there so you can kill them. And so, yeah. They got to see that they could be more than what their average, what their previous portrayal had been in historically in coming out of Hollywood. So yeah, it did that. Did it play on some stereotypes? Probably. Were the stereotypes completely wrong? Some were and some weren't. I mean, you know, like there's usually some grain of truth in almost every stereotype. I mean, it
right.
didn't get made up fully out of, you know, and yeah, so it was so funny. I saw this thing on Huffington Post and it really irritated me because it was supposed to be for, you know, about Black Month, you know, Black History Month. And it said, you know, what all your Black, what your your African-American friends want you to understand. And it's like, it's not our job to educate you. It's not our blah, 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 blah. And then at the last one, it was like, and we're not all alike. And I'm like, the last one should have been first and all the rest of them should have gone away, because all the rest of them sounded like they're black, had a single voice that said all of these things. Don't ask me to explain my experience. I think that there are black people out there that actually go, I'll explain my experience. I don't have a problem with explaining my experience. I get that you may not get my experience if I don't explain it. You're still not going to get it because you're not walking in my black feet, in, no matter what the shoe color is. But yeah, I mean, the statements were so much, I'm like, oh my God. The last statement showed the hypocrisy of all the first statements of, this is what all your African-American friends want you to know. Didn't that just make all your African-American friends only have one voice? Or am I missing something?
Right.
We'll do it again in a month. And who knows? Yeah. Maybe I'll make it to Manchester.
That would be wonderful. You're always welcome.
Okay. Well, there are a few people who visit your show that might not agree with that. But...
All right, Dr. Kevin. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.